Good morning, church. Just really, really excited about Christina getting baptized last week. What a thrill to share in that family event. And I'm so excited this week that we are going to be honoring the nurses, the front liners, as they are really serving in a great capacity, really helping our communities at large. And the title of my sermon this morning is First and Greatest. And the idea here is that this sermon is going to be dedicated to the incredible servants in our community and those who are helping us to navigate through this coronavirus. And so in order for us to talk about that, Jesus talks about how he came not to serve, not to be served rather, but to serve. But in order for us to get to that passage that Jesus talked about, I really want to build it up and help us to understand the context for all of that. You know, at the end of our service here today, we're going to have a video that's going to be dedicated to the great servants of our community. You know, at this moment in time, what we need truly is leadership. And we're going to talk a little bit about leadership in many different forms, be it if you are a community leader, whether or not you have some employees that you watch over and that you manage and that you supervise, or even if you are a leader in your own family. My prayer this morning is for us to really understand this concept of leadership in God's kingdom. You know, so let's go back and talk a little bit about this. Before we go into our key passage here today, I wanted to talk a little bit about the build-up to this. And so in Mark chapter 8 is the context for us to talk about this unbelievable passage, the passage about serving in a great capacity. So in Mark chapter 8, we see that Jesus was at the height of his ministry. As a matter of fact, crowds were gathering around him all the time. Crowds of 5,000 he's fed, crowds of 4,000 that he's fed. I mean, it's the dream of any religious leader is to have so many people following you. As a matter of fact, even in our church community, our goal is to have a great program online and that people can be drawn to the service and be attracted to it and to ultimately hear the message of Jesus. And so we want to draw a crowd. There's no question about that. And yet we see something about Jesus that is quite remarkable. And so we see that miracles are being performed. We see that people are gathering. I mean, thousands upon thousands are gathering. And then we see that Peter proclaims that Jesus is indeed the Christ. I mean, it couldn't get any better than that. Crowds are following. Jesus now is recognized by his followers as the Messiah. I mean, things are really coming together. All is right and all is great. Here is this kingdom that Jesus has been talking about, and the people understand who Jesus is with respect to this kingdom. And then in Mark chapter 8, there is an abrupt turn. In Mark chapter 8, in verse 31, Jesus now calls his disciples. And he says in verse 31, he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. Now, that's a very weird thing to say. At the height of this ministry that Jesus started, he's now talking about the fact that he's going to suffer, that he is going to be rejected, and that ultimately he is going to be executed. Now, that's not the power message that Jesus was ultimately talking about, is it? I mean, here he is getting very popular. People are understanding. He asked the people, who do you think I am? And a lot of them recognize him as being a spiritual person, you know, Elijah, Moses, or one of the prophets. Of course, Peter proclaims he's the Messiah. They're getting it. They're understanding it. And then now he says something quite dramatic. He says, Peter and other friends, this is a different kingdom. This is not the kingdom that you're used to. And then it says in verse 32, he spoke plainly about this. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. Get behind me, Satan, he said. You do not have in mind the things and concerns of God, but merely human concerns. And so Peter didn't like what Jesus was saying. This message was not the message that we were looking for. This is not the message that we want to talk about. We're not going to have very many people follow us if we teach this message. And he actually wanted to rebuke Jesus. And Jesus pulls him aside and he says, Peter, this is a different kind of kingdom. This is a different kind of king with a different kind of kingdom. And we're going to go through a little bit of this to understand what this kingdom ultimately is all about. As a matter of fact, Jesus rebukes Peter pretty sharply. And he says, you've got to think kingdom way. You've got to think the way God thinks. You've got to think about a different kingdom, not the ones that you see in front of you. And the next few minutes is going to be used to expound on what this kingdom is truly like. And so we pick it up in verse 34 in Mark chapter 8. Then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet lose or forfeit his very self? This is a different message. Jesus has come on and he's talking now. He says, if you want to follow me, and by the way, that call is not only for the disciples there, it's also for us. And then he uses an image that is very familiar to the disciples there. Of course, we know that the cross was used as a physical deterrent for anyone who wanted to cause an uprising within that Roman community. And so they were very familiar with crosses. And Jesus sends a very unpopular message, not a message that is absolutely filled with hugs and kisses, but one that talks about a journey that is not going to be easy. This is going to be a different kingdom. And its king rules differently. And then he says, this is how this kingdom is going to work. If you actually want to save your life, you will actually lose it. But if you lose your life for the sake of the gospel, that's how you're actually going to keep your life. He says, if you try to gain the whole world, you might lose your soul. And he's trying to teach them a message here that this new kingdom is not about gathering possessions. It's not about how much property and real estate and power you can wield. It's actually upside down. You want to gain your life? You must lose it. Want to save your soul? You've got to forsake the world. And I'm not so sure what the disciples were probably thinking at this time. Wait a minute. We thought you were going to restore the kingdom to Israel. And we're going to have a king that's going to lead us properly and lead us righteously. And we are not going to be in subjection to these brutal oppressors. But Jesus's message was, no. You understand that I'm the Messiah. You understand that clearly. And I'm telling you, we're going to Jerusalem. And in Jerusalem, I'm going to suffer, I'm going to be rejected, and I am ultimately going to be executed. This is a remarkably different kingdom that you're used to. They were in Caesarea Philippi when Peter made this proclamation that Jesus was indeed the Messiah. And Jesus says, we must go to Jerusalem. That's about 150 kilometers. And so he says, do you want to come follow me to Jerusalem? Do you understand what we're going to be going through? And do you still want to follow me? You know, the book of Mark actually is a recollection of Peter and his interactions with Jesus. And Peter now is telling an absolutely remarkable story. History tells us John Mark is the one that's penning this letter that Peter observed in his time with Jesus. And Peter lives to tell an unbelievable and a remarkable story. Yes, it was a life that he had of fear. Yes, it was a life that he had some trepidations and some trials and some miscues. Yet, Peter and his story is a remarkable story that is lived for all of history for us to understand. You know, I'll digress a little bit here for a second. I have a question for you. And the question is this. What is your story about this coronavirus going to be? When we're over this a year from now, 2 years from now, whenever we're completely recalling this story, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, what will be your story? Is it going to be worth telling? In Peter's encounter with Jesus, his story is now worth telling to the point where it's scripture for us. I'm not convinced that John Mark thought he was writing scripture. He was just pulling together the story that Peter was telling him. And now it's a remarkable story that's for us all. 2,000 years later, we're reading about this story and this beautiful story of hope, of majestic leadership. What is your story going to be? We know Christina's story is going to be one that during this time, I surrendered my life to this Messiah, and I've chosen to follow him for the rest of my life. And that's where the story begins. What is yours going to be? And that is a challenge that I have for all of us in the community, in our faith community, in our neighborhoods, in our family. What is your story going to be? Anyways, let's get back to the building up of this idea of the first and greatest. You know, within the next little while, three times, Jesus warned the disciples that he was going to suffer, that he was going to be rejected, and that he was going to be killed. And without a doubt, there is going to be some fear that comes with that. That if this is your destiny, there's got to be some fear. You know, when I chose to become a disciple just like you, the promises of God is not that we are going to gain the whole world. It's not that we're going to live in mansions and drive beautiful cars and just absolutely bask in what this world and the material things that this world has to offer. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But the idea is our promise actually is one of rejection, of being misunderstood. And there was some fear to that. I remember my family saying and talking to me, are you sure this is the life that you want to live? Because I had lived a religious life before that was really non-committal. That I had some inklings and some forms of godliness, but really was not a dedication of taking up my cross and denying myself and really choosing to follow the person of Jesus. And when I decided to make that calling, I responded to that calling, there was some fear. And the truth is now 34 years later, there are times I still make decisions that I wonder what's going to happen in the end. What would my retirement be like? What would my financial situation be like? What am I going to leave my kids? Are some fears that come. And yet the question, the thing about fear, what it does, it always leads to self-protection and self-preservation. That's where it ultimately leads. And sometimes even in this environment, that's what it can lead to. And yet Jesus calls and he says, no, you cannot be controlled by fear, but rather you've got to give up your life. You've got to deny yourself. And you cannot let fear ultimately control how you live your life. And the truth is, when we live in fear, we lose the opportunity to do something extraordinary. When we live in fear, we lose the opportunity for us to write a story and to tell a story that's worth repeating. If that's where we live and that's where we reside, and that's what controls us. And Jesus tells a story about following him. And yes, it's going to be, there's going to be some fear, but I ultimately have you. Interestingly, we pick it up now as they're heading from Caesarea Philippi, heading south to Jerusalem. It's about 150 kilometers. And they took a number of days before they go there. They pass from Caesarea Philippi through Galilee to Jericho and ultimately to Jerusalem. And we know, of course, Jesus warned them, if you were to read chapter 9, you'll see he warned them not once, not twice, three times plainly what was going to happen in Jerusalem, and that he was going to meet his demise, that he was going to be executed, that he was going to be killed. And look what it says in Mark chapter 10. We pick it up in Mark chapter 10. And we see an interesting disposition of Jesus. In Mark chapter 10 and verse 32, Jesus continues to preach the word. There are crowds gathering, but he knows he's resolutely set out for Jerusalem because he's awaiting his destiny. He's awaiting what is ultimately going to be, what is going to happen to him. Not a coronation of people recognizing who he is and saying, here's the Messiah, let's crown him as his Messiah. No, he's going to Jerusalem to meet suffering, rejection, and execution. And look what it says in verse 32 in chapter 10. They were on their way up to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way. Now let's stop there for a second. Here is a guy going to suffering, rejection, and execution. And what was he doing? He can't be held back. He's going there. He is going to Jerusalem, knowing what's going to meet him there. And look what it says, and the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. It's interesting. These disciples, after being warned a number of times, what is the destiny that awaits Jesus, were absolutely blown away by this guy. Here he was going to be suffering, and he can't wait to get there. What a remarkable disposition. And so it says, again, he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to him. And again, he tells them what was going to happen. We're going up to Jerusalem, he reminded them. And the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death. They will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him, spit on him, flog him, kill him. And 3 days later, he will rise. Again, he reminds them of what is going to happen in Jerusalem. And then the most remarkable sequence happens. Let's look at it a little bit. So that's the background of the title of my sermon. Okay, so they were at the height of their ministry. Jesus now abruptly turns and tells them, guys, this is not going to be a cakewalk. This is going to be challenging. Are you sure you want to follow me? And invariably, as he was heading from Caesarea Philippi all the way to Jerusalem to meet his execution and rejection and suffering, he reminds them time and time again what this is going to entail. And it's going to entail you not having a great time, so to speak. It's going to be met with significant challenges. And this is a kingdom that is different. It's not about preserving your life. It's actually about giving it away. It's not about seeking after the world. It's actually about seeking after your soul and making sure that your soul is tended to, and not your physical being so much, but rather your spiritual being. This is a different kind of kingdom. This is a kingdom that is ultimately upside down. And then most remarkable, perhaps one of the most remarkable confrontation in the book of Mark. Look at what happens. In verse 35, it says, then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Hey, Jesus, we want you to do us a favor. Now be mindful. Jesus just told them what is going to happen to him. Jesus just told them what is the fate of his time here on earth. And what was their question? Hey, we need a favor from you. It wasn't about Jesus. It was about themselves. And he says this. I don't know. I could almost picture the faith of Jesus with unbelievable patience. I mean, if Jesus could have lost it, it would have been this time and it would have been completely understandable. But with unbelievable patience, he says, "What do you want me to do for you?" They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right hand and at your left hand in glory." This is amazing. Jesus is talking, and he's told them a message before, and he says, if you want to be great, you've got to serve. And they are asking about positions of influence and prominence. That's what they saw this relationship with God ultimately was about. Was about authority and prominence and influence. And Jesus says, you don't know what you're asking. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? We can, they answered. And Jesus said to them, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with, but to sit at my right hand or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they are prepared. When the 10 heard this, they became indignant with James and John. So it's amazing. So these guys, the 12 of them, now heard about the fact that James and John asked about positions of prominence, positions of influence, position of authority. And they got mad at James and John. They say, wait a minute. We want a piece of this gig. Did we miss our opportunity to ask for our share? And then Jesus tells a story that is quite remarkable. He says, guys, come here. Let's talk. He calls them together and he said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. He says, you see how the Romans rule. It's all about influence and power, exercising authority over people. That's what it's all about. And I don't know if these guys say, yes, that's why we want positions of influence and power and authority in your kingdom. He says, that's how they live. Did I not tell you that this kingdom is upside down? It's the other way around? He says, that's how they live. And then he says, not so with you. I love the way the translators just stands out those four words, not so with you. He says, that's not the kingdom that we are going to be a part of. That's not what leaders in the kingdom are going to be like and how they're going to be defined. That's not how leaders in the communities are going to be defined. He says, instead, whoever wants to become great must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. Jesus talks about the serve, the first and the greatest. He says, in this kingdom, it's not about how many people that are under you. In this kingdom, it's not about how many subjects you rule. It's about how many people you serve. It's about how many you are a slave to. That's how this kingdom operates. The metric for greatness. Yes, you can become great, but it's about, do you serve? But being so busy to serve is not a badge of honor. It's an indictment on how you understand leadership. Can you imagine that we use our position of influence and authority to leverage serving others? Can you imagine that our communities, that me, you, in our homes, that the way we look at leadership is not how many people we can get to do things for us, is not what people can do for me, is what I can do for you. How can I help? Can you imagine if Jesus and his followers in particular adopt this mentality? That it's one that says, how can I help? How can I serve? Jesus says, in this kingdom, that's what leadership looks like. Not so much like how the Gentiles do it. And then he says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. He says, guys, I'm not asking you to do something that I myself am not doing. This is a kingdom not where its subjects die for its king. It's a kingdom where its king dies for its subjects. It's upside down. This is not a kingdom where the people are taxed so that they can give to the king. It's that the kingdom gives himself and empties himself for his people. You know, as the heroes that we serve, the heroes that serve us through this time, the nurses, it's called Nurses Week. We're going to have a song in a few moments that is dedicated to the nurses, the doctors, the people who are giving of themselves, who are thinking not about themselves. You know, there's so many people that are having seminars and webinars on how to capitalize on people in this time of the pandemic. And unfortunately, there are some people who even call themselves Christians that adore and look up to those people that says, how innovative, how creative, man, how brilliant that these people can capitalize and make the best of this opportunity. And there's a lot of euphemism. And Jesus says, that's not leadership. That's how the Gentiles do it. But followers of mine asks, how can I serve? How can I help? To whom shall I be a slave? And I know this message is not the most popular message. But Jesus says that's how this kingdom is ultimately going to operate. That power and influence is used not to control and then not leveraged to get more power and more influence simply to gain more possessions. That power and influence is used to serve others, is used to give to others, not to accumulate more, not to leverage. And that is an upside down. That's what kingdom greatness is all about. It's not about eloquence. It's not about how big your community is. It's not what kind of building you worship in. It's not how great your worship service is. And we should try and do all those things. But it's measured in how we serve others. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that we're a society that actually cherish this kind of leadership? Or are we the ones that talk about how far we can throw a ball? Or how much money we can gain being an influencer on the social media? How quick we are to dribble a ball? How many followers we have on our Instagram? How much we can build an empire? Is that how Jesus measures greatness? Is that how you measure greatness? Is that how you evaluate whether or not someone is great? Do we use the same metrics? Jesus says this is an upside down kingdom. Its king gives its life for its people. And then he demonstrates, and we'll close with this passage, and then we'll have a song. He demonstrates very clearly what he just preached. He says, then they came to Jericho, that's all the way south from Caesarea Philippi. As Jesus and his disciples together with a large crowd again, were leaving a city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more louder, son of David, have mercy on him. Jesus stopped and said, call him. Now, you got to think about this. Here is Jesus resolutely setting out for Jerusalem, about to die. I think anybody would excuse Jesus because his mind would be preoccupied with the suffering he's about to endure, with the execution that he was about to endure, if he didn't quite stop and take care of this man born blind. And Jesus, busy as he was, stopped. And he said, let me talk to this guy. And so he called to the blind man, cheer up on your feet, he's calling you. Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. And here is an interesting question. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. The blind man said, Rabbi, I want to see. Interestingly, Jesus asked the blind man the very same question he asked James and John. I wonder if he asked that question in the same tone and in the same manner to remind James and John what this guy, all he wanted to see. James and John wanted position of prominence, even up to the point of Jesus' death. And Jesus stops and he meets this man wherever he was at. He demonstrates. This guy says, I want to see. You know, that is also the cry I hope we all have, that we want to see who we need to be and what we need to be in this kingdom whose king dies for its subjects. Who says, it's not about gaining your life, it's about losing your life. It's not about gathering materials in this world, it's about tending to your soul. It's not about how many people serve you, it's about how many people you serve. It's not about having power and influence so that you can gain more power and influence and leverage that so that you can gain even more power and influence. It's actually about how many people you serve and how many people you gift it. It's actually about giving your life as a ransom for many. That's this kingdom that he was talking about all throughout his time here on earth. And he says, the kingdom of God is near. And so I want to thank the doctors and nurses who give of themselves and who think not about themselves, but rather, how can we get our communities back as quickly as possible? Thank you, nurses. Thank you, doctors. We have a few in our congregation. You'll see their pictures. You encourage our soul because you have fashioned yourself in a way that Jesus calls his subjects to fashion themselves in his kingdom. It's not about power and influence. To gain more power and influence. To gain more power and influence. It's about how much we can give of ourselves, how many we can serve. My prayer is that as we think about the kingdom that we're a part of, that we look at the king that's this king that we serve, that we imitate him. When he calls us to follow him, not only to Jerusalem, to the cross, but to do things the way he does. May we be people who not only see and are able to distinguish who is truly great in our communities, that we laud those who are truly great, not how far you can hit a golf ball, not how quickly you can get down a basketball court, not how beautiful you can sing and how much money you have. It's about how many people we actually serve. So I thank you today. I thank you for your time, and I pray that as we get more and more enveloped in this kingdom, that we will understand what to be first, what it looks like, and what to be great, what it looks like. Thank you so much. And we can have a song at this point in time that is entitled Encourage My Soul. Thank you. Thank you, heroes, for giving of yourself and being subjects in a kingdom where its king ultimately asks, how can I help you? Thank you.